Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Watch Less, Complex's podcast about movie and TV culture. My name is Cal, deputy editor of Complex's Pop Culture Vertical. As always, the summer man, Fraser Tharp, is with me.
Yes, sir.
How you doing, man? How was the 30th birthday?
Subdued, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's good that you at least had a couple of, close people come out. It was good. It was cool to see.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of, it's the Rona, what else are you going to do? It's been weird trying to figure out what we're even going to be talking about this week. Like, the way the world works, we caught the last bit of big pop culture news with last week's episode because the Emmy nominations had just happened. And it's been kind of dry out.
Very dry. I mean, it's getting a little weird, but at the same time, it's like, I'm never worried about a stoppage.
Yeah.
In the sense that there's always going to be something to watch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, when there is.
Like, there's, even if I have to go back a decade, like, there's so much to keep me busy. But in terms of just, like, moving the conversation forward, you do hit kind of, like, stalemates sometimes.
It's just what it is. And I mean, it's not too surprising. I mean, no matter what the quarantine is, it's still August. Like, this is normally, for a lot of studios, it's kind of a flatter period, especially when it comes to summer. There might be a blockbuster or two that hits in August, mid-August, but a lot of the time it's people waiting for that the Labor Day weekend and things like that, you know. But it's been interesting to see that for the last couple of weeks there's been a horror film that's not just been like, I believe the stat for The Rental, which is a James Franco's brother Dave Franco's directorial debut, it's the second film to ever top the VOD charts and the box office in the same weekend. Now, mind you, it's only made $1.1 million at the box office, but because of the quarantine, that is the top box office draw right now. It just is what it is.
What a crazy stat. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I don't know if you're a big horror nut.
I was going to say, I mean, I think I am a fan of horror. I think.
Yeah, how could you not be?
I grew up watching, you know, again, like Freddy Krueger and things like that. These are things that I remember watching fairly early on in my movie going experience, especially because TV, cable channels, there's just an influx of really cheap, really bad horror films that come out. There's some dope ones, but I think a lot of people who like experimenting with film and what you can do on camera, I think they have a lot of fun with horror films because it's almost like you're free to let a lot of things, there's a lot to experiment with. It's not just a slasher film. It's not just a zombie film. It's not just, you know, ultra gore. It can be something that happens, you know, just inside your head. But, you know, it's a very interesting genre to really look at. And I it's interesting that The Rental is the top horror film or the top film right now. It's a horror film about Airbnb culture.
Well, yeah, I mean, it resonates in a weird way because it's about a fixed location staying in, and especially in summertime, that's what a lot of people are doing. It's pretty much one of the only things you can do.
I think that's what people
go to some remote location and just hole up.
Right now, I think I've seen a lot of people talking about road trips, and I think it's just like these destinations. Like, all right, we're in Jersey, let's drive to Georgia and be in Georgia for a weekend in some weird house in the woods, and then you get a situation like The Rental.
But I mean, so to dial back a little bit, so today we're going to talk about some horror movies that have come out recently and have been keeping the summer afloat. And two of those are The Rental, which was directed by Dave Franco. Dave Franco's directorial debut, actually. And You Should Have Left, which is a Blumhouse production starring Kevin Bacon. And both are pretty much like Twilight Zones about Airbnb.
Yeah.
At different ends of the spectrum. But what is funny about it, and how you bring it up about it coming out and during quarantine times, it's crazy how, you know, I'm watching them and I'm like, I'm always in remote location movies. I'm always like, what's so appealing about a remote location?
Yeah. 100%.
You know, it immediately looks sus the minute they get there and look around. But now that's what people are doing.
That's life.
And that's like a wave that so many people are on, and it's an alternative. So it's like the one time where you would be okay with it. And then these two horror movies come out to be like, oh, just so you don't get it twisted.
Don't do that. Don't do that. The Rental, though, I mean, I was surprised. I had low expectations for The Rental. I don't think I'd even really seen much in regards to advertising for this film. Not on YouTube bumpers, not anything. Like, I don't think I saw anything, which is surprising me considering that it starred Dan Stevens and Alison Brie.
Well, another interesting thing about The Rental, which could speak to its success and its success in these times, is that, you know, drive-ins are coming back in a big way. And The Rental has a very B-movie drive-in feel.
100%. I wish I had a car so I could go to a drive-in. That would be a great experience right now. But it's also, this was an IFC film.
Yo, IFC, that was one of my go-to theaters back when we had theaters.
That's pretty dope. It's pretty dope to see them be able to, because again, for because you mentioned it, I don't want to undersell the film, because even if you call it, you know, like something that has B-movie vibes, it's doing a lot of really good things for a quote-unquote B-movie, what turns into like a B-movie slasher film. You know, the way the, once, it's hard to talk about this film without going too deep into the plot. There's a central.
We'll do a spoiler section too, just so they know.
I mean, there's a moment in the film where, obviously, like something happens, something huge happens, and the film takes like a sharp left turn from that point. And in real life, like real person situations where you have to deal with some of the things that these people have to deal with, the way the score was done, it wasn't low, it was very loud in the film, you know, it was right there with you. I was on the edge of my seat at times of this film. It was the score, though. The score really did it for me more than anything else, I'd say.
I think that we have to give Dave a nice shout out that, you know, anytime you hear actor turned director, and once you add in the family aspect to that too, it could go like a real, like just nepotism or self-indulgence kind of wave. And I think this is a really, really solid job.
Yeah, no, it, very well done. Very well done.
He really exceeds at building atmosphere and tension.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I didn't love the film. I think, again, there's a point in the film where I was so hype. It's like, wow, this is new. This is really, it feels really fresh. It feels really, really, really unique and modern. And then, again, it takes that turn, it builds up this intensity, and then it turns into a lot of other horror films I've seen lately. Like, it felt like a You're Next. You know what I mean? Like,
well, it should have felt like that, because Joe Swanberg is a co-writer on this with Dave.
I got you. Yeah, so that's cool. And,
you know, we got to, just to shout out the Joe Swanberg universe. So,
yeah,
Joe Swanberg wrote and co-stars in You're Next, which is one of my favorite horror movies.
That was a big one for a lot of people. Like the early 2010s horror scene. You're Next was very important. 2013
when that dropped.
Yeah, it was very important for a lot of people, especially I think for this revitalization of horror. This what do they call it? The elevated horror. I think a lot of that's a term they hate, but I mean, that's the wave that's been happening since around that time. So, but go ahead.
Yeah. So if you want to check out Your Next, actually have no idea where it's streaming. I don't know if it's streaming anywhere, but
I'd say first try Shudder. Shudder's a good place for anything horror, but if it's not there, then add us on @ComplexPop, Twitter, Instagram. We'll figure it out for you. It'll be me. I'll figure it out for you. I promise.
Yeah, that's a fun little horror home invasion film.
Spoiler alert for anybody who's not seen The Rental, I would say fast forward at least 3 to 4 minutes, because I wouldn't.
Well, actually, should we talk about the movie and then do a spoiler section? That's like
I think my theory about why Joe is there is very sport. I don't know if I can talk about it without talking about what was actually going on in the film. So, all right, pause on the spoiler alert. We'll get to that in a little bit.
My other main takeaway from the movie is Alison Brie is just,
she's great. She's
she can
great.
Do everything.
Why is she not doing more?
Right?
Like an actually talent and not just.
And this is coming from someone who doesn't even watch Glow yet.
She is phenomenal in Glow. But I think the thing is while she's very funny, she's not just a comedic actress. She's very good at drama. Even in this, like she had a lot of humor. She was able to just kind of flit around when she wanted, but she was able to also, you know, bring some other emotion in there. And it's not even like heavy. It just is who she is as an actress.
Well, yeah. I mean, so us Mad Men stands know that, you know, she plays a very prominent wife on that show. Mm-hmm. And she's never a main cast member, but she was always like, you know, hella recurring. You could always catch her in at least a handful of episodes per season from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Community mm-hmm. was on around that point. So it was whiplash, but in a great way to see her doing all this dramatic stuff on Mad Men, which can also be, it can be very funny. You know, people who have a stuffy version of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Mad Men is hilarious, and she's part of one of probably the funniest couples that gets the most laugh out loud reactions.
Word.
But she is dramatic on it. And then you go to something like that Community, which is like wacky. So it was dope to see her husband put her in a movie that pulls out both sides, because mm-hmm. at first she's straightforward wife. And like you said, already infusing, doing a lot with that role with not much.
Mm-hmm.
And then once she takes the Molly, it's just like a switch turns. Like her line reading when they're looking for the dog and she's fucking with the hot tub is amazing.
Oh, that's the dog.
Like, I feel like it was actually a missed opportunity. The movie could have had more fun with her being on drugs while real shit is unfolding.
I think that was one thing that I started, because again, at that point, especially that moment, I think she was really good. And I feel like, but after that, she's not in the film as much anymore. Like the story kind of, it almost leaves her to the side to kind of deal with like the real situation. Okay, so there's two couples. There's Dan Stevens' character, who is married to Alison Brie's character.
Yes.
And he works with a woman named, is it Mina?
Yeah.
Mina, and Mina is dating his brother, Josh.
Right? Lit from Shameless.
Right, 100%. So very early on, you notice that Dan Stevens' character, Charlie's his name, and me, there's something there. Like, first scene, you're like, yeah, they're definitely, there's some type of chemistry there that's a little more than just like, I own this business and I have you, Mina, as my, you know, understudy, my assistant, you know, someone who can really learn. We can learn from each other. You know, there's a little more than that going on. So with this going on, these two couples say, hey, let's get away for the weekend. You know, we just had some success at work. Let's go rent this crazy spot on Airbnb and turn up, you know, have a fun couples weekend.
By the way, I want to jump in with a note here that I just thought of.
Okay.
Because you raise a really great point.
I tend to do that, whole, don't I?
You do. But you raise a really great point about the coronavirus aspect of everything.
Yeah.
But obviously this was made before this year.
Yes, yes.
But I would like to say that when we do get back to making movies, and creators and writers and directors are tempted to make stuff that reflects this period,
mm-hmm.
this is kind of the only way I want to see it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like this exact movie could also start with, hey, we have to social distance. Mm-hmm. Let's go to this house.
100%.
That's the only type of coronavirus content I want to see. Like something that lightly informs the plot and then moves on to other things.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, it's all, think of, for again, note for anybody trying to make coronavirus content, especially if you're trying to do horror content, watch, what was it? Is it 10 Cloverfield Lane? Is that the number?
Yes.
What? That's a film. You know,
yo, that went off Hulu before I could fucking rewatch it.
I got you. I mean, let me know. I got you.
Say less.
It's set in the Cloverfield universe, yes, but it is not a Cloverfield film until one key moment. The film, it's basically like, it's not home invasion. What? It's like a isolation, like a, survivalist, you know, what the worst thing to happen when you're in, you're stuck in a situation with a survivalist, especially a paranoid motherfucker who's already more paranoid. Again, given what you realize about the situation that's going on, it's
Goodman goes goat level in that.
What an amazing film. Anyway. So again,
back to the rental. You do a good job setting up the characters, because
that's where we are.
The crazy thing about this is, obviously, its power isn't that it's a horror movie and you're waiting for the shoe to drop.
Yes.
But it would have been kind of an entertaining movie just watching them fall apart.
Yeah.
Like, the characters are shaded in well enough. At a certain point, I started hating all of them and waiting for death.
You know, I didn't like... that was early on, I was like, there's nobody who's redeemable. I don't like anyone here.
I mean, I'm always going to like... Alison Brie is one of those people who... One of those character actors who, you know, she always will lose herself in the role, but it's still Alison Brie to me.
She was cool, but it was still kind of weird to be like, yeah, we going to turn up this weekend. And then the first time it's time to turn up, she's like, nah, I got some shit to do. I'm going to go to bed early. And then everybody gets fucked up. And then the next day she's like, oh, is there even anything left for me to do? Because I'm trying to turn up because y'all being weird now.
Yeah, I was like, why did you even... offer that to them.
It was in her bag. It was in. She said, "Should we do it now?" Homegirl said, "Bet," and goes to her bag and pulls it out.
I felt bad for her too, because then they didn't want to go on the hike.
No, what happened when she went to bed? Fucked the whole game up. It changed. Yeah, so it changed the game.
Basically, you know, they set these two couples up and put them on a collision course to fall apart regardless. But there is some horror elements, and the script is hinting at either the Airbnb owner or his creepy, probably racist emissary who was like the groundskeeper or whatever.
Yeah, hold up. I gotta find my man's name too, because he's in a lot, actually. Toby Huss?
Yeah, he was. I think he was the dad in Halloween.
He was most recently, if you watch the last Halloween remake that came out in 2018, he played Ray Nelson, the father of the granddaughter of... Homegirl's character.
He's always solid.
Jamie Lee Curtis. Yeah, he's a great actor. It was funny to see him in this, because when I watched it, it reminded me, I couldn't watch the whole film because it's a very graphically violent film, and I don't have the time to sit and just watch like torture porn, especially torture porn from like the 70s. But I'd never seen I Spit on Your Grave. Have you ever seen this film?
No, I know the name, obviously.
The film, it's a really graphic and really like disturbing film, but there is a redemption factor.
It's from the 70s.
It's from this. I think it got remade. There was a remake that came out in 2010, but I think the original, I want to say it was 78. I'm not 100% sure.
Well, dude, we already know what they were on in that decade. Like, it was the same decade as Last House on the Left.
Exactly. It was. I honestly don't recommend people watch the film, but the idea of someone coming to an area that's like kind of desolate and being out of place, and having like the quote unquote townsfolk reacting to them. I had just like screened through a little bit of this film and caught that vibe. And I was like, damn, this really feels like that film. But again, it turns on its ear. It's,
well, I was worried that it was going to get a little bit too woke. In terms of like, sometimes when genre movies try to infuse that kind of stuff, it's not that I don't want to see it, it's that it just gets kind of like Anvil
yeah.
level writing. And you know, the like when she kept picking fights with him that were just, at a certain point, it's like Dan Stevens was perfect as the white guy who doesn't want to broach any of that uncomfortable shit.
He said, maybe it's not, what, in a perfect world, what if it's not that? What is
And that's
it?
Pussy. Yeah. But at the same time, she would pick fights with Toby Huss's character and be like, why? Who would do this right now?
Well, and the thing
like
is,
if it was me and you felt the way,
yeah,
then pick that fight after you leave the man's property and yell, you know,
like, because if you're catching a sketchy vibe that he's kind of a racist and you're out in the middle of nowhere at this man's house,
at his behest almost, you know,
like you antagonizing him at a certain point is like, why do you not value your own life? Because at a certain point, it's just like, are you asking for something to happen? Like, you could do things a certain ways. We've seen, so again, woke liberals, they couldn't have done like a, you know, like a vlog or like a TikTok or something. Like, you know, 36 reasons why the Airbnb guy have is racist. Like, you know, there's different ways you could have handled this situation, Ma. But, you know,
I want to talk about just because you were saying what it reminded you of. This gave me Vacancy vibes. I don't know. Have you seen that?
No, I've heard of it though. I've not seen it though.
Vacancy is a really fun B movie. Randomly, I remember talking to Just Blaze about this movie.
Wow! Look at this. Look at this. Twitter. Look at this flex. Look at this flex.
There's no flex. It's just that I follow him obviously, and he tweeted something about it. And I was like, oh shit! Like, I wasn't expecting people to know that movie, but apparently he's a horror nut.
You had the conversation on Twitter, or was it in the DM?
No, on Twitter. Okay. But Vacancy is a really fun B movie with Luke. I believe it's Luke Wilson and who's my girl that Pete Davidson bagged it inexplicably? Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah.
So it's that's more of like a fun twist on the idea of snuff films.
Yeah.
And then they go to like a shady motel. They end up at a shady motel and it turns out the owner and the crew are snuff freaks or whatever.
Yeah.
Now you should watch. That's not disturbing. It's kind of, it's fun.
If you've seen Bad Times at the El Royale, which came out a couple years ago, and you saw that area behind.
That's what happens when you try to do elevated bullshit.
Yeah.
Bad Times at the...
That had good elements too. I mean, seeing Cynthia, the whole Cynthia Erivo singing moment when the camera's going back and forth, but as a film.
All right, so let's talk about the other Airbnb horror that we watched recently, so then we can go to the spoiler section.
Okay, all right, yeah. So You Should Have Left. That's the name of the movie, right?
You Should Have Left.
You never should have watched it.
I knew you were gonna do that.
That's the meme. If you go, shouts out Letterboxd. Because I was watching these and I made sure that I was getting my reviews in, because if I don't, I forget. And when I went to Letterboxd to log it, I'm just wanting to read a couple of these. Hold on. Well, there was a couple that were just, oh damn. I put mine in there. I never should have started it. I should have went to bed. But I really should have went to bed. I couldn't finish this film. It wasn't.
You didn't finish it?
It wasn't good. It wasn't good.
Well, shout out Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, I agree. I should have left.
You know, Kevin Bacon, it's weird to see him in a thespian like him in a movie, like a mid-tier horror dump.
Is it?
But then you also got to remember that he and his wife, Keira Sedgwick, shout out The Closer.
Yeah.
Where they were Madoff victims, so, you know, this might have been a check grab.
He produced this, too.
Well, I mean, at this point, if you're Kevin Bacon, you're producing everything that you're starring in.
Yeah, but I'm just hoping he wasn't in there like, yeah, this is going to be the one.
So this is, it's a similar Airbnb situation, which is such a funny coincidence to me.
It's actually hysterical, because this film came out fairly recently as well.
It's much more cerebral. If we're talking about films that these new films reminded us of, I think obviously this one, people could say The Shining maybe in a light way, but this actually reminded me of Secret Window.
Yeah, this felt like a number of films that I've seen.
It kind of deals with like, it very clearly it deals with, more, it's more cerebral.
Yeah,
it's more about like repressed rage and stuff like that. And you know, Kevin Bacon's character is writing in a diary furiously anytime he's mad and listening to like meditation and remote location going crazy. So it kind of felt like, you know, it was immediately almost clear to me that this is a Kevin Bacon is his own worst enemy situation.
What was his job before this time in his life? Was he a writer?
I think he just said he had banker money.
Because dude was definitely like wealthy.
Well, at first I thought he was living off her until they said it explicitly.
Yeah, I
couldn't figure out if it was their kid or one of their kids from a previous thing.
Yeah, it was, well, because he's, the thing is that he's noticeably older than her.
Yeah, for sure.
And mind you, she's already like a, I hate using the word aging, but like the way Hollywood looks at women, like her character seemed to me to be like, she might have been 35, 36, like at that point where Hollywood's like, okay, you're only going to be good for a couple of other things at a certain point. So she's taking roles that might not be for her.
I want to know, what part did you, let's lay the plot out first for people just in case they haven't seen it. It's Kevin Bacon. And he's dating Amanda Seyfried, who is clearly his junior.
Yes.
They're married. They're married.
They're married,
and they have a kid.
Yeah, they have a kid, and again,
she's an actress.
And you can tell there's an age difference. I don't know how old they're supposed to be, but there is an age difference between the two.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even need the movie to spell that out at this point. Bacon's got to be pushing 60, right?
But I think that because like immediately, like he talks about his jealousy and all this stuff, and like that's like one of the biggest things, just the fact that he goes to the set and homegirl's like, you know, well, she's having a romantic scene on set. Like he's already jealous, and he's going to the set at that moment. Like
her first little line of dialogue to him is calling him an old man.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. Funny. It's crazy.
So anyway, she's an actress. He's wealthy and retired. They have a kid. So they go on a getaway in London, a staycation.
Yeah.
Before she has to go off the set.
Word.
To film some more. And they're having a little family summer getaway that at a remote location that quickly goes sour.
Mm-hmm.
So where did you bail? Because it's only like an 80-minute film.
Whenever the house started expanding internally, because the house.
My nigga, that could have been like 30 minutes in.
Exactly.
No, because he keeps having the dreams.
It was in one of the last thing I remember seeing is him aimlessly wandering down a hallway.
Is that when the daughter's actually lost, or when he is just having a nightmare?
They're all lost.
Oh, when she's like looking for the jacket?
Yes, yes, yeah.
Okay, all right, yeah. All right.
It was a substantial amount of film, but I didn't care.
So by then you,
because who cares? Who? All right, you're in this house. Yeah, I've seen this movie before.
Yeah, I mean, so just to get it out of the way, The Rental is definitely the better movie.
The rental in the land
of the Airbnb. horror classics to come out
in the clash of the Airbnb VOD horror films. The Rental easily knocks out You Should Have Left.
So, but you hit me saying that, oh, I didn't know Amanda Seyfried was in this.
All right.
No wonder I couldn't finish. And I, because just to give you some context first,
yeah.
One of the shows I'm always begging you to watch,
yeah,
Veronica Mars.
She's in it.
She's in that. She's a big part of that. And she, Mean Girls.
Yeah, no, and trust me.
So I've always got love for Amanda Seyfried. I don't know where.
I was a fan of hers, especially, you know, back then. I dug her in Mean Girls. I dug her in a lot of that stuff. And this is going to sound weird. What, First Reformed?
Uh-huh.
She was like my least favorite character in that film. I did not like her or that role in that film.
Really?
Yeah. And I it soured me a little bit. I get it in the film because he's a priest and he's got this, you know, repressed, you know, sexual desire, and they're doing all this weird, like, almost sexual stuff in the house or whatever. But, like, come the fuck on. Like, again, we've seen that. It's like, I've seen that before. Like, I don't, you're already doing all of this amazing shit. I don't need him hopping on top of her, and then they go into the fucking cosmos. Like, that's what happened in the movie, right? Like, I'm not making this shit up. They pan into them. I don't even know if you can. I don't know what they were doing. They were just laying there. But they
I like that movie.
I like that movie, except for that storyline in the film.
So First Reformed, which now that you bring up, creates a weird pattern, centers Amanda Seyfried in a weird Hollywood pattern of younger actress and older man.
Yes.
Ethan Hawke's definitely got at least 15 years on her.
Yes.
First Reform completely ruined Amanda Seyfried.
She's 34. There's no reason that she needs to be doing... Because, and again, she's a good actress. Kevin Bacon, 62, by the way. She's a good actress. I want to see her doing better stuff. She doesn't need to... And mind you...
You're angry... I'm angry at this
film. This is a Blum. Don't forget, you mentioned Jason Blum. Him and Kevin Bacon produced this film. This is a Blumhouse film.
Well, okay. My thing, I don't see Blumhouse and expect I'm going to get an A+ film. I expect I'm going to get an interesting horror film at least.
I'm not saying I never have I said A+. I don't go into Blumhouse looking for A+. I go into Blumhouse looking to be at least entertained. I mean, that's the company. The Purge films are some of the worst films I've seen in terms of just like quality of story and things like that. Even for like horror films, they're not great horror films, but they're enjoyable. They're the films that turn me on the Blumhouse, you know. And again, Blumhouse had a lot to do with Get Out. They had a lot to do with a lot of things that were, say, Halloween coming back, like we mentioned earlier. There's a lot of things that have been going on that Blumhouse has had their hands in. Not everything's been great, but like this might be
the
in a minute. Like
you were bored.
Film. I was extreme for a 93-minute film. I was extremely bored.
Okay, well.
And this was after watching The Relic, which also bored me.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I don't know. Well, here's the thing. Let's go into the spoiler section.
Okay. Now, spoiler alert on The Rental. Because you mentioned that the homie Joe worked on this. My theory is that I think at some point Dave Franco had a very good idea, very great premise, very good idea for a film, which involved cheating, which involved racism with Airbnb rentals, and then also involved like stalkery, like an actual like horror film slasher element. I don't think he knew how to end that film. I think he got to a point where it was like, hey, so they have sex and then someone dies. And then these regular people don't know what to do as what? And Joe's like, oh yeah, there's been a stalker the entire time and he's just going to come in and kill everybody. And as he was recording it.
Well, that's interesting to me that
the movie.
Well, contrasting these films for a minute again, you know, The Rental is this very lean, like,
yes,
almost, not, I don't want to say fast food, but it's like very direct.
Yeah, it's
in your face.
It's thin. There's not a lot of meat there. It's very, it's thin because it doesn't need to be.
But yeah, it's like our boy Logan Roy says, straight to the protein.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, you should have left is more cerebral. And I think that's where it can get boring because it's more just like head trips,
mm-hmm,
bullshit. And the ending is way more about, you know, emotional reckonings or whatever.
Yeah, fuck that. I hate that. I'm down with horror being metaphors for other things. Again, you know, we're living in a time of Hereditary and Midsommar, but every film doesn't need to be like it. This isn't fucking Kevin Bacon's The Way Back or whatever, where like he's dealing with whatever real life shit.
Maybe he tried it to be, but The Rental is more just their end game is death.
If he was looking,
which
for,
I appreciate,
if he was looking for a slam dunk, that shit hit the rim. Boing. But the thing with The Rental is just, you could have told that story without the Your Next element in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, even if it is like, oh, there's a racist dude and the dude accidentally kills him and then these people have to figure it out and they all just turn on each other. You could have made a good film, or at least a solid enough B-movie VOD horror film ending with that there.
Oh, so you didn't want it to go to killer at all?
Well, when again and again, I because it's doing so well, quote unquote, at the box office and on video on demand, I was surprised. You mentioned to me that they were talking about a sequel.
Yeah. So the ending, if you've made it to the spoiler section, hopefully you've already watched the ending.
Yeah.
But
thank you for indulging us for a second.
You know, some guy, weirdo guy in a mask, comes out and works him.
Mm-hmm.
Cleans up the entire house. Cleans up any. Did he hide the bodies too?
I don't remember the bodies.
They don't show him. Yeah,
they're not in the house, and I'm assuming that it's clean enough to where he. Because at some point he has to put that house.
Well, that's my thing, because it shows him getting another property though.
Yeah,
and I'm doing it all over again.
I'm gonna if you're that much of a cerebral psychopath where you're going to rent an Airbnb, stick countless cameras throughout the facility.
He had a grip of cameras.
And wait, because remember, at the end, it wasn't just like, oh, it's this, you know, happy black couple. He just goes and kills them. There's like a couple of different scenes before, you know, the moment where he goes to, you know, to grab somebody. So you have to have enough patience to wait for that moment.
He has some voyeuristic shit going on for sure. But the main point is that it shows you this with all questions, no answers, or no explanation.
I don't want it.
So I did read an interview where Dave said that he had sequel in mind ending that. I think that takes away from the ending.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm okay with the no exposition ending if that's just the ending, because that's kind of, you know, I always like when people switch it up and zigzag a little bit.
Did you see...
Exposition is always bad.
What was the name of that Matt Dillon horror film that came out a couple years ago? It might have been last year. I really didn't like it.
You talking about the one where he's a serial killer?
Yes. The House that Jack Built.
Yeah, it wasn't that like some Lars von Trier shit?
It was... I do not recommend watching this film. It's one of those films... We'll get to the highbrow horror in a bit, because I do want to talk about Relic before we get out of here. But it's a film essentially where this guy who's been a serial killer is on his way to hell, and during his descent he's having a conversation, or he's in the afterlife. It might be purgatory. I forget the actual premise of where they're having a conversation, but the idea is that he's talking about his life as a serial killer and the things that he's done. And it's very gruesome and grotesque shit. And it just shows you that in the 70s, if you were a white guy with glasses, you could literally just walk up into someone's house and murder them, pull them out of the house, and then just wipe down some shit and be done. It was a really ridiculous film. And I think a lot of people looked at it and was like, oh, but there's so much meaning, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, it's a fucking excuse to be grotesque on film. I get you want to do that. I understand that you want to add, you know, something else. But at the end of the day, they wanted to show a scene where a guy was dragging somebody behind his fucking white van or whatever. Like, that's what you made this film for. Keep it a buck, my guy.
How does that relate to The Rental?
Well, it's not The Rental so much as like You Should Have Left, or just the idea in general of these films that they're horror films, but they have to mean so much. These horror films that have to, oh, God.
Well, all right. So I'll tell you how you should have left End since he didn't make it.
There's just too much horror doing the same shit. I've seen it on. It's all not good. Well, but go in.
You can already predict how it ends.
Go in though. Go in.
It's Kevin Bacon. The shit is all in his head. The house is like a kind of sentient thing. The trap.
Yeah, Mother. When did Mother come out? 2017, 2016. Yeah. 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 Again. Okay.
But Mother's like a Christ allegory or whatever.
If this is it's not that far off from the dude's rage has turned the house into this his rage has brought him to this house that's going to devour people who seek it out or whatever the fuck because of their whatever's going on in their head. Like, come on, my
right. God. Well, I mean, the movie amps up Bacon's jealousy towards Amanda Seyfried and then confirms his suspicions, but they reveal that he's infamous for maybe killing his first wife, and there's a trial that he beat.
Yeah.
It turns out that he didn't quite kill her, but he watched her like take pills and essentially kill herself.
Think Walter White in a
with Jane. Yeah. Pretty much. So they reveal that, and then he has like a face off with the old. And as soon as I saw the old guy, I kind of knew that was supposed to be Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
In some regard. And so he stays in the house while they leave, and it's like the house is his hell.
Even seeing the old guy talking to the little girl, for anybody who's old enough to remember Cat's Eye, young Drew Barrymore with the little troll, it reminded me, there's so much shit in this film of like, this is 20 different films stitched together, but you're trying to frame it in this, you know, esoteric, you know, it's horrible. I mean, this has been going on since Night of the Living Dead, people. Like, none of this. It's great that societal, you know, woes and all this shit can be thrust in the films, but you also got to make the films good.
Yeah. So The Rental for me, I had way less problems with. There's a tension between liking something that's lean,
yeah,
liking no exposition, and still feeling like you want a little more because the shit all kind of crescendos really quickly.
Yeah.
And then he kind of, like, there's some really great scenes, I think.
But
Dave pulled off a great shot with, you know, Alison Brie's death scene is really cool.
Yes, that's a very good sequence, yes.
The tracking shot that follows the Mina character out of the house is dope. And, you know, they get a good jump out of Lip's death.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you know, this is just like a guy and a creepy mask attacking them with a hammer.
But that, I remember my point now. Because I think the thing with this film is there's probably two different films here. There's one film where this toxic two couple situation turns into a murder at a desolate Airbnb and everybody freaks out and like, and it's the film where there's a final girl walking off all bloodied, but she survived, you know, the depths of what, you know, lust and human depravity can do to four people one night off of a couple of Molly. The other film, which is the house that Jack built, is the film where you're following the psychopathic guy who, like, because if we had seen a little more of what we got to see with the person breaking down the steps to put the cameras all around, if we got to see more of that in the beginning, I think you could have had a better film. At the very least, seeing that there is more at play, and it's because the guys are supposed to be, oh, you think it's going to be the dude Taylor or whatever, the guy who works on the house, but no, and he might not have been crazy, but no, it's really the other good.
Anyone who's seen a horror movie knows that's a classic red herring.
That's the ruse, and I think that's why Joe's there. I think Dave didn't know where to go, tying this all in. I think Dave didn't know where to go. Joe came in and said, oh, well, Horror 101 says, obviously, this guy's not going to be the guy. It's going to be this. But it felt like such, by the time the film ends, it feels like such a different film.
I disagree. I think it's creepy. No exposition makes things creepier, which is cool. I think you just needed a little bit more shading around the edges to, like, give it like a fuller picture of what he was up to. And I will say I did appreciate, you know, obviously he's like a bare bones killer with literally just a hammer,
yeah,
in an old man mask, but that guy was moving in a way that you don't see killers in most of these movies. Like, he was very fast.
So what's going to happen in the sequel? Anya Taylor-Joy is going to be... She's going to come in somehow and start trying to understand who this guy in the creepy old killer mask.
You know me. I never am team sequel. I don't need a sequel for this at all.
Look,
I would rather see Dave try something else.
That whoever this white man was with this loose income that it's almost like
it's not loose income. He's getting the house payments.
No, but it's like if American Psycho is in a 2020 situation, Bateman would be taking like 2 or 3 months off of the year to look into his lucrative murder Airbnb business. You know what I'm saying?
Arguably.
The sequel is going to be the real life of this dude who just happens to go out and buy Airbnb or set up Airbnbs to stalk and murder people.
I hope not. But I hope this doesn't, this might adversely affect the Airbnb industry.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Be safe. It's already a shady business out there, people, but you should be safe. Or don't watch this film before you don't watch You Should Have Left It All. And I'm sorry.
All right, wait, what'd you give it on Letterboxd?
One. I gave it 1 star.
I gave it 2.5. I gave this 2.5 and I went 3.5 for the rental.
I went 3 with rental and I went 1 with You Should Have Left. I really didn't like You Should Have Left.
I tried to defend it. I wasn't. It was the best horror is 80 to 90 minutes.
It's a great.
And that runtime, it didn't turn me off enough. It got out just in time.
And I will say Rental was going to get a 2.5, but when I thought about it, I was like I actually enjoyed this film more than I think I do. So I gave it the 3. I might go back and rewatch Rental again.
Films kind of have a good they get to cheat a little bit because the first 40 to 45 minutes to an hour is always about the dread of what you think could be going on.
Well, and I think, I mean, because we're not going to have a lot of time to break down this movie, but I think that's what, there's another film that came out.
We're out of the spoiler section.
Yeah, spoiler section is over. You know, again, I apologize. If you want to watch the movie, please speed by. I hope you sped by. Another film that IFC dropped, this is under their IFC Midnight series. It just hit VOD in about a month ago, July 3rd, I think it hit. But it was released, it got a world premiere at Sundance back in January. It's this film called Relic. It's a horror.
Very drama. Different beast.
There's a lot of comparisons to Hereditary, which, you know, it probably isn't too fair, although I can see that.
Yeah, I don't know if I see that.
I think the idea of being in, like, a family where one person is, you know, obviously descending into something and there's a mother who's having to figure out, you know, what exactly is going on. I can see where comparisons are, but it's clear. Yeah. It's the way Relic moves. Cause you know, you bring up the point of, you know, getting 40 minutes of, you know, a film before shit picks up. Relic was like, when you see a movie and within the first 2 or 3 minutes, there's a naked old lady just standing there. Like, shit's on. You know what I'm saying? Remember the It Chapter 2 trailer where...
Yeah, with the old lady.
They hit you with the old lady. You know what I'm saying? You knew that this... You're trained to say, okay, this movie's going to be different. And I think once you get there, it doesn't... It's not like it gets any crazier. It gets like super worse because it's really a creepy movie. It's not necessarily like too gory compared to some other films. It's very dark and it's very artistic.
Yeah, well, it goes back to what we were talking about, and you were saying that most horror movies try and fail at trying to infuse their movies with deeper meaning.
Yeah,
this one's like much more successful at it. Certainly, yes. Much more than a You Should Have Left. You know, it's really just an allegory for, you know, the parent becoming the child almost, and
yes,
deteriorating parents, and that kind of fear that, you know, a older adult has about their parents sliding into like dementia and Alzheimer's, and the do we take care of her? Do we put her in a home? It's kind of like making all those fears from subtext to text.
It's, and again, I mean,
a murderous old lady.
It's creepy because she's old, and at times she's been wandering around her house naked, and then just like the stuff that they've done with like the way the body moves. I don't, like I said, it's a very, there is a lot of symbolism. A lot of stuff, again, if you want to like just take a couple hours and kind of just like transport into like this weird, it's almost like what they wanted the turning to be.
I'll never know,
please don't. Again, you should have left and the turning, don't, if you're talking about 2020 horror, you keep those in the trash bin. You don't even worry about those for a bit. Again, I'm sorry, but like, you know, we at some point you have to, you know, throw out the bad and keep the good. And I think Relic is it for people who like horror and they want like a different, you know, something that like movies like, what was that, Star, did you watch Starfish?
No, not yet.
Starfish is, if you watch Starfish and liked it, I think this is the movie that they wanted Starfish to be. They're not the same thematically at all, but I think just the idea of being so super artistic, so really like committed to a certain look and feel. That's,
yeah, this is definitely that. And this was another debut, actually.
Yes.
This was definitely, wait, let's pause and get that director's
name. I got it. Her name. It was the directorial debut of Natalie Erica James. And interesting enough, film produced by Jake Gyllenhaal. Well, he's one of.
I noted that.
One of a list.
Real nigga.
I don't know how much it took to make this film. The budget couldn't have been too crazy because there's only.
No, not at all. Three main characters.
Two or
three supporting. Yeah. One location.
But there were like six or seven different production companies at the head of it. So I don't.
You never know.
I'm glad that it was able to be done. And again, if you're a fan of horror, I don't want to say elevated horror, but if you want something that's a little more different, a little more artistic and unique, I would say get into this. And the other thing, and I don't want to spoil it, but I think it's one of those films where, again, let this film stay what it is. I think the ending of this film, of the three that I've watched, it's probably the most satisfying one, especially for a horror film. You know what I'm saying? Like,
there's a lot of empathy in it, and you know, a final shot that kind of like underlines and ties off the themes and the symbolism and what it's going for.
Yeah, I gotta rewatch it. I was a little. I think my initial watch, I was a little tired. It's probably,
yeah, like, I watched it at like at 2 a.m, like dozing in and out. But
I ended up,
I was never that shook during it.
No, it's not like a scary film. Again, I think that's the thing. Because there's moments in this film where like, it's a good thing this is a horror film, because what you're doing right now, Miss James, is very goddamn disgusting and creepy. But it's not like jump scare, hide your eyes. Well, I mean, I guess for some people, again, of the three, Relic is the film where it's like, if you're most, there's some moments where you've got a queasy stomach.
Of the three, Relic is probably the artsiest
with its horror,
and the most successful in terms of script,
yes,
execution,
yes,
and intent,
100%.
But The Rental is just more of my type of horror movie. So that's probably why I'd give that like the half star edge.
Understood. Well, I guess how many horror heads are out there? There was a moment where with Complex Pop Culture, there was a good run with
The Good, I think we did 50 best scary movies of all time.
There's some content on that site. There's some really good content on that site, especially like 2015 era. Shouts out KYK. But
horror is the genre that might save us in coronavirus. Look at that.
Because that's the other thing. Because these films, they don't like compared to. That's why Blumhouse has been key. Because he can make these very high, for all intents and purposes, high quality looking films. You know, they're good enough to run in theaters. For I think You Should Have Left was maybe like $4 million was the budget. They said it's around $4 million to make You Should Have Left. So
half of that's probably just Kevin Bacon.
100%. Again, it's one location. They're doing a lot of stuff with computer graphics and editing and things like that. So you can get a lot done with the Blumhouse model. And that's what makes that shit so successful.
And I think, you know, we've talked on this podcast a lot about me being a theater snob. Mm-hmm. I think that of all the genres, horror, again, there's something great about watching a horror movie in a packed theater.
Facts.
Dark theater, quiet audience reactions. You know, I've definitely, I think Mandy was an option where you could have watched it at home, and I went to go see it at like 11:30, yeah. Alamo, just because. But it is the genre that transports or translates best at home.
Because I remember when we went to see It Chapter 2, and you were not pressed from the crowd.
Well, that's Times Square too. Again, that's horror is also the one aspect where the theater experience can go very awry. Like, yeah. if you're in one of the hot theaters. And niggas just eating nuggets and joking at the thing the whole time. You could be taken out of that really quickly. So on both sides of the spectrum, it's one that's like, I don't mind watching at home for the first time.
Yeah.
You can very easily just save shit for nighttime.
100%.
Cut the lights out and lock in. So,
yeah.
You know, I think horror is going to be a way out for the industry to make money and to produce films as we get back to whatever the new normal is, you know, because like I said earlier, both of these movies were clearly made before the pandemic, mm-hmm. but they reflect the pandemic in terms of just the story,
yeah.
and the actual execution. Like, if you are, whenever things open up and you're going for a production again and you kind of want to limit things and tamp things down, these are the types of movies that you can make.
Word.
To get around those concerns, so
and
just an interesting thing to note.
And don't forget, it's also interesting to see the box again, a box office that a $1.1 million film can be the 2 week top of the spot. But you know, we're still due. Fingers crossed, a Candyman. I don't know at this point. Jersey just rolled back. They went from 100 people in a spot to 25. So. I don't know about theaters. I'm just putting that out there right now. But Candyman is technically still scheduled for October. So
hopefully things shape the fuck up in 2 months.
Yeah, we'll see. Again, fingers crossed for Yaya. Fingers crossed for Nia DaCosta. Fingers crossed for Jordan Peele for that one. No shade to your man's and Tenet, but you know, it would be dope to see the world being normal. Horror fans, if you've seen any of these films, hit us up at Complex Pop Twitter and Instagram. That's going to do it for this week. And for anybody that is digging the horror conversation that you heard us have here, go back. One of our first, like, truly like A-list top of the line guests, Elijah Wood, came in. He's been making and producing horror on his own. And we have some really good horror conversation on there as well. A conversation, and we didn't talk about it today, a conversation that actually made Frasier watch some of the Nightmare on Elm Street. So maybe for a future, if you guys want to hear us talk about more horror and maybe review Nightmare on Elm Street 3 on the podcast, let us know what you're rocking with. I really appreciate you guys checking us out and listening every week. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. Let us know what your horror favorites are. Again, at Complex Pop Twitter and Instagram. Watch List drops every Wednesday, 6 a.m. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or Player. Wherever you get your podcasts, we're there. Please give us a like, rate, comment, subscribe. Whatever you got to do on your favorite service to let people know that you're rocking with us would be greatly, greatly appreciated. We appreciate the love we're getting in the conversation we're having now, but you know, those things do help as well. We will catch you guys next week for Frasier Tharp. Again, happy birthday once again. He's officially an old man. This is Cal advising you to... you should have a pack with like sanitizer, extra mask, whatever you need to stay safe out there, gloves, whatever you got to do. 6 feet as always. If you're feeling sick, stay the hell inside. If it's feeling like it's too much, call a doc. I don't know. Just take care of yourselves and people around you. It's about to be Labor Day and we're still in this goddamn house. Tune in and watch less. Peace.
Peace.
Watch Less is hosted by Fraser Tharp and myself, Cal. Our producer is Taliba Newman. Associate producer and sound engineer is Jasmine Plata. Production manager, Chancel Correa. Talent booker, Anthony Allred. Junior booker, Austin Bailey. Our director of talent relations is Kristen Price Harrell. And our senior director of operations is Jen Stewart. Watch Less is a part of the Complex Podcast Network.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.